The New Dominion, everything Virginia. Politics, economy, society, pop culture, sports, and more. And it's on the air. From our studios in the Shenandoah Valley, it's The New Dominion Show.
Welcome to The New Dominion Show. I'm Chris Graham. A busy week for us this week. We have Kent Willis from the ACLU, Lee Chapman, a New Dominion political correspondent covering the South Carolina primaries, Quentin Kidd, Christopher Newport University professor, talking about the Creed Deeds announcement from last week regarding his run for governor in Virginia. We want to get right into the show here. We have an interview with Bill Bowling, the lieutenant governor of Virginia. We're going to talk about the Virginia state budget in part one of our two-part interview. Next week, we'll talk with him about the presidential race, and he's involved in that, chairing the Virginia campaign for former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney. But we'll get right into it here with Bill Bowling talking about the Virginia budget, and you hear some questions and answers about the budget that Governor Tim Kaine proposed earlier this week, and some thoughts there that Bill Bowling wants to share about how everything's going to be financed and how things might turn out in the General Assembly regarding the budget. Governor's budget introduced this week, and $78 billion biennial budget, and a lot of surprises, but maybe the biggest surprise. On the one hand, a lot of new spending introduced in the budget, but on the other hand, some interesting ways of figuring out how to finance that. Bill, you've been critical of this. I want to get your thoughts on just how we're going to be able to balance all this with the new spending in place.
Well, Chris, first of all, thanks for having me on, and Merry Christmas to you and to all your listeners. And, you know, if there was ever a doubt that it was Christmas time, that doubt was erased when we saw that budget that came out the other day because, you know, even though we're going through some tight economic times right now and the economy's just not growing as fast as it has in the past few years, you know, the governor still wants to embark on literally hundreds of millions of dollars of spending initiatives, some for brand new government programs, some for expanded government programs. And then he wants to pay for all that stuff in some pretty questionable ways. So, it was an interesting budget presentation. I know it's tough to put these budgets together, but I think this one's is going to need a lot of work. We've got serious concerns that I'm glad to talk about some of the things that he's doing to balance the budget in the current fiscal year. And then we've also got serious concerns about some of these new spending initiatives and bonded debt and how he wants to pay for it in the next biennium.
Yeah, a key concern that I've noted just looking at things from the last couple of days is we seem to be getting ourselves into the same problem that we're facing as in the current fiscal year with revenue forecasts that maybe are a little rosy, we can say, as one way of balancing this budget. I think that's a concern I've seen put out there by other people as well.
Well, absolutely. I've broken it down into two different categories. If you look at the first thing we're going to have to deal with is how do you balance the budget in the current fiscal year? Because in the current fiscal year, because economic growth has been less than anticipated, we have about a $618 million budget surplus. And the governor has proposed in large part, eliminating that surplus by taking $267 million out of the state's savings account or the rainy day fund, and then B, this just amazes me, taking $180 million that had been earmarked for transportation projects and using it to eliminate the budget shortfall in the current fiscal year, and then not repaying that money, if it's in fact repaid at all, until 2010. So in the current fiscal year, you know, we have problems with taking money out of the savings account to eliminate the shortfall, and we have problems with stealing money from transportation to eliminate the shortfall. And then secondly, if you look at the upcoming biennium, that's where you've got these just literally hundreds of millions of dollars of spending on brand new programs, you know, his pre-K initiative, health care initiatives, child support initiatives, mental health reform initiatives, higher education initiatives. And by and large, he wants to pay for that two ways. One is through an overly optimistic revenue assumption of 6.6% revenue growth in the second year of the biennium. By the way, that's twice what the economy is currently growing. And then secondly is through about $3 billion in bonded debt, which of course has to be paid back out of those same overly optimistic revenue projections. So this budget, it really is built on a house of cards. It may be a good political budget in that it gives money to lots of groups that want money, But it is a fiscally irresponsible budget, and this is not how we became the best managed state in America. So we want to work with the governor to try to come up with budgets when we can, but this one's going to need a lot of work.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. We're talking with Bill Bowling, the Lieutenant Governor of Virginia. As far as finding common ground, it seems like it's going to be difficult to find some common ground between the common fiscal responsibility kind of approach that a lot of us want to take to the budget and the approach where we're going to add some new programs and also take some money from different funds that are questionable at best, and also looking at these rosy economic forecasts. It's kind of hard to say, well, we're just going to split the difference here, and that's sometimes a political solution. Where do we kind of go from here?
Well, I think what the General Assembly, unfortunately, is going to have to do is just kind of go back to the drawing board on this budget. You know, in the current fiscal year, rather than taking money out of the savings account or stealing money from transportation projects, I think we're going to have to go back and look for ways to achieve additional reductions in spending from state agencies. You know, the governor asked some state agencies to reduce their budgets by 5%. But he exempted two-thirds of the state agencies from those 5% reductions. So I think we're going to have to go back and look and say, are there agencies that we can ask to achieve reductions that have not previously been asked to achieve them? Are there some agencies that can achieve reductions in addition to the 5% that they've achieved so far? There are also some capital projects in the current fiscal year that have not yet been built. I think we're going to need to say, can some of these be deferred to help fill this shortfall? And then lastly, there are some carryover balances from prior fiscal years in a number of state agencies. That's money that was allocated but not spent that we're going to have to look at possibly using to eliminate the shortfall. So there are things we can do rather than taking money out of the savings account and away from transportation. We're going to have to look at all those options. And in the next biennium, I think the first thing we're going to have to do is come up with a more realistic revenue forecast. I think 6.6% is overly optimistic. I hope we grow at 6.6%, but I think we need to be more conservative in our estimates, maybe something around 4.5%. And then we need to figure out exactly what we can and can't do based upon that 4% revenue growth. So I think there are going to be some major changes to the budget. It'll be interesting to see. I think I know how the House majority will react to this budget. I think they share the same concerns I have. It will be interesting to see how the new Senate Democratic majority reacts to this budget. I've got to think that there are some Democratic members of the Senate who even they will have some concerns about some of the approaches that the governor's taken in this budget.
You hear there again from Bill Bowling. That was part one of part two. We'll have some talking with Bill next week about the presidential race and his involvement in the Mitt Romney campaign in Virginia. Coming right up, we'll talk with Kent Willis from the ACLU about fusion centers, something you might or might not have heard of.
Everything Virginia, the New Dominion, www.thenewdominion.com.
You don't have to go all the way to Greenfront. Fine furnishings are now available in Fishersville. Stop by our store and get a free gift when you make your first purchase of $30 or more. As a bonus, you'll be registered to win $500 in free furnishings just for registering to receive our HomeSense newsletter. Home Innovations is located on Route 250 in Fishersville, across from the Augusta County Library. Home Innovations, turning the house you have into the home you've always dreamed of.
It's back, and it's like you've never seen it before. The January 2008 edition of the New Dominion magazine marks the debut of our new glossy full-color look. With a cover story breaking down the obscenity case in Stanton, a look inside economic trends in Waynesboro, interviews with TV and radio mainstays, a look at rural Virginia politics, and a few minutes in an MMA cage. And it's free. The New Dominion magazine is available at locations throughout the Valley in Central Virginia. To find out more, go to thenewdominion.com. Thenewdominion.com. The New Dominion Magazine, available in print in the Valley and Central Virginia. Find out more at thenewdominion.com. Joining us now on the New Dominion Show is Kent Willis, the Executive Director of the ACLU of Virginia. We're going to talk about something that I didn't know about until I heard about this recently. government fusion centers in a number of states, including Virginia, that are used as data collecting and mining operations at the state level to collect information about us as private citizens, and ACLU raising some concerns about the Virginia operation. Kent, this is a surprise to me. Give us some background on just how these kind of things came into fruition.
Well, they were quietly created a couple of years ago. Over the last 3 or 4 years, I think, more than 40 of the states have developed these fusion centers. It's one of those things that just caught on in the post-9/11 world. In a way, it's the state mimicking what you've been reading about at the federal level. In fact, I'm reminded of a failed federal program called TIA, Total Information Awareness Program, that was an attempt by the Pentagon several years ago to basically collect all the information that could possibly be collected on everyone in the world, and then out of that create profiles of who might be terrorists and who might not be.
Scary to think about these kind of things. We're talking with Kent Wellis from the ACLU of Virginia here on the New Dominion Show. And this is an effort, again, it's some state involvement, of course, the FBI also housed in this center, and talk about the kind of things they do. I mean, they're basically collecting information from wherever they can get it, from public sources and I guess otherwise, in that way you're talking about there, just get information about us and kind of maybe create these kind of profiles, or at least have background for these kind of things.
And that's the notion here, that it's more than a notion, it's a theory, that the more information you can collect on individuals, the more likely you are to be able to predict who is going to cause harm. And of course, all of these come out of a philosophy of fighting terrorism. So what you have in the center in Virginia, which is common among these centers, is a place that collects information from the military, from local state government, from the federal government, and maybe in many ways most alarmingly from the private sector. And the reason that's alarming is that at least we know there's supposed to be limits on how you collect and how you use information that is government information. Now, everyone doesn't always obey the rules, but if the rules are obeyed, there's some limits on how this information is shared and what information is available through government sources, including the military. But the private sector is different, and that's because we have this notion that the Fourth Amendment applies to government activities, that is, that government can't unreasonably access information about us. But the private sector can use the information it collects in almost any way it wants. And what we're talking about is use of your credit cards, buying history, however you make any kind of transaction electronically. A lot of that is uncontrolled by law. And so lots of information about individuals is out there in the private sector. And here's a government agency accessing that information with no limitations on it whatsoever. It doesn't have those kinds of constitutional protections that apply to government information. So in a way, it's sort of a frightening concept that you have these centers. And one of the things that concerns us most about them is not so much that they exist and that they don't have a legitimate purpose in today's society, but that they have come up quietly, and they've come up with almost no review or oversight or measure of their effectiveness. And so you have these things that are kind of growing on their own, figuring out new innovative ways to collect information, and we don't know exactly what they're doing with it.
Kent Wellis, the executive director of the ACLU of Virginia, joining us here on the New Dominion Show. Now, just to play devil's advocate, supporters, advocates of this program will say, well, all they're doing is getting information that's already out there from public sources and from private sources and putting it together in one place. What is the big deal about that? I don't know. There's maybe something to that, just that this information is out there. I understand, though, that, of course, the big concern is that it's being put together in one place by a government entity for different purposes.
Yeah, and when you state it that way, I think most people say, yeah, that's the point. Now, one issue is when you begin to collect information like this from all these different sources and put it together, you may move from individualized places not necessarily invading my privacy. But once it's all collected and put together, I have a single place where a great deal of information is centralized and known about me. And I think that all of us should be concerned about that kind of invasion of privacy. But probably the greater concern, some of the issues I alluded to earlier, no one has really measured the effectiveness of these organizations because there's very little oversight. There's also questions of mistakes. The greater the information or the more data that's fed into any kind of machine, the more likely there are to be mistakes because human beings feed this data in. Anyone that's tangled with IRS because IRS made a mistake, not because you made a mistake, but because IRS made a mistake, knows what I'm talking about. IRS sometimes will make a mistake on your taxes. People will sometimes take 1, 2, 3 years threats of jail and litigation before finally IRS figures out that they made the mistake. The more data that's collected, the more it's centralized, the more likely they are to be mistakes, and people are likely to, perfectly innocent people, are more likely to find themselves kind of in government's harm's way because of mistakes that are made in these kinds of systems. Once again, you ought to be able to do this, and you ought to be able to do it right, but what that means is the whole system ought to be absolutely accountable to someone outside the system. There ought to be constant review and oversight, and that review and oversight from an outside agency, including citizens, may not include access to the individual information, but what information is being collected, from whom, how is it being collected, and then ultimately, is it effective? Are we gathering this information for no reason whatsoever, or is it actually helping us fight terror?
Well, we'll have more information on this subject on our website. Kent, thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much.
Stop the presses. News from a different angle. Fridays at thenewdominion.com. Advertisers want to reach sports fans who follow their favorite teams on the Sports Dominion? Contact us today, 540-949-6574 or thesportsdominion@comcast.net. Daily website, weekly radio show, The Sports Dominion. Sports your way.
Links to blogs from across the Commonwealth. The place to go to see what people are saying. The New Dominion, www.thenewdominion.com.
Joining me now on the New Dominion Show is Quentin Kidd, a regular here on the show, a political science professor at Christopher Newport University. We have a lot to talk about, and we're recording this interview on Thursday. I think we were both surprised, Quentin, that the news of the day today in Virginia politics, the news that Creed Deeds is announcing that he's going to run for governor. I guess we kind of had an inkling that this was going to happen, but I guess the timing of the announcement might be the only surprise today.
Yeah, that's really what gets me. I don't understand the timing. It's right before the holidays, right after a special election, a special congressional election that obviously didn't involve the whole state, but right before the holidays. You know, in my mind, the smart thing to do would be to wait till after the General Assembly session. There must be a strategy behind it. It may be that he just needs to get his name out there, early. I was surprised when I got the announcement. It totally caught me off guard.
At first, we're so far out from 2009 that I was thinking, well, yeah, back during the 2005 cycle, I remember hearing from those candidates around this time, but that was only a year ahead of time, not 2 years ahead of time. So maybe that's how far out we are that I was thrown off by that, too. We're talking with Quentin Kidd here on the New Dominion Show, and I guess maybe switching gears a little bit, we'll go to right there in your neck of the woods, the 1st Congressional District, the special election there, and we see the maybe not surprising, I shouldn't say maybe not surprising, Rob Whitman winning a pretty convincing victory down there in that race. Was that really just a foregone conclusion that Republicans were going to do pretty well in that race?
Well, I mean, the first is a conservative district. It's probably the second most Republican congressional district in Virginia. But in my mind, it's not a 61% Republican district. It's more like a 55, 56% Republican district. And I think the real anomaly here is why the why the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee didn't come in and support its candidate, Phil Forgeit, any more than it did. I can't help but think that if Forgeit had some financial support from the Democratic Party, that he couldn't have done better than he did. Having said that, I think Whitman, it was Whitman's to lose simply because it's such a Republican district. It leans so Republican. It hasn't been held by a Democrat, I think, in about 35 years. Whitman's win makes it the first time in about 20-some-odd years that it will be occupied by somebody who's not from Hampton Roads. Whitman is from the northern part of the district, which ranges, you know, goes from Prince William County all the way down to Hampton on the Chesapeake Bay. So it's a really long and narrow district. And for the last 20-some-odd years, it's been held by somebody in Hampton Roads, and this would be the first time since then that it's held by somebody from the northern part of the district. And I think that's an interesting question that people in Hampton Roads have. You know, will that affect the extent to which the shipping industry, for example, and the military, the Navy, are looked out for by the person who sits in that seat? And I imagine that Whitman will do a fine job looking out for those industries.
Yeah, he was scoring that point for himself, waking up early the morning after the election to go shake hands with people at shipyards in the Newport News area.
I think that is an important point. And here's what's really more important about it than people realize. The Newport News shipyard is not in the 1st Congressional District. It's actually in Bobby Scott's district. So for him to go to the shipyard and say thanks suggests, I think, powerfully that he realizes how important the shipping industry is, the shipbuilding industry is, and that he's going to pay attention to it.
Interesting. Quentin Kidd joining us here on the New Dominion Show from Christopher Newport University. And another interesting thing about that, I guess special election season continues in Virginia because with Rob Whitman winning that seat, that opens up his seat in the House of Delegates in Virginia. And the interesting thing there, that could actually help Democrats in the state house there. It looks like Albert Pollard would run for that seat. And one would have to think, looking at how well he ran in the Senate race in that region, which includes that House district, that he might run well there, and that would give Democrats another step towards getting to a majority there down the road.
Yeah, in fact, what I hear from Democrats is that they feel really good about Al Pollard running to replace Whitman, and I don't hear Republicans talking about that race, even though I'm sure that they'll have a really credible and strong candidate who will be probably well-funded. But Democrats seem to feel really good about it. And here's what's interesting about that. Compare the way Democrats supported Phil Forgeit in this special congressional election to the way they're talking about how they would support Al Pollard. And I think there's just a disconnection between the state party and how it supports the state Democratic Party and how it supports its candidates and the National Democratic Party and how it supports its candidates in Virginia congressional races, and it just seems like night and day to me. I think that says that in Virginia, the Democrats feel really good. Nationally, the Democrats may not feel really good about Virginia, especially in a congressional seat that leans Republican.
It's interesting. Quentin Kidd joining us here on the New Dominion Show. I know I saw a quote from the governor about this, Governor Kane, saying something to the effect that he wanted to see the Democratic National Committee get more involved, too. And he understands why they wouldn't. They have 50 states to worry about, but Virginia is his bread and butter, and that's what he's worried about there, too. And so I think it seems apparent even to Virginians that this is the case. And I wanted to have one more thing about Virginia politics, and it has some tie to the Newport News area in some way. Jim Webb, military veteran and who ran pretty well in the Newport News and Tidewater area, being talked about as a possible vice presidential candidate down the road. Tim Kaine talking about him in that respect. This buzz has been kind of going on, off and on, for the last few months, you know, since Jim Webb gave the Democratic response to the State of the Union address earlier this year. Just want to get your feel. Are we Virginia boosting too much here to have Jim Webb in this place, or is he maybe a viable contender there?
Well, I mean, I think at this point what happens, what 9 months out from a presidential candidate picking a running mate is the field of names is pretty large. Probably 30 or 40 names out there talked about as potential vice presidential candidates. And Jim Webb and Governor Kane and other Democrats in Virginia certainly want his name, Webb's name, in that pool of names that people talk about. And I think it's because he has a couple of strengths that the Democratic Party sees as being helpful to them down the road. One is he's got a lot of military experience. He was the Secretary of Navy. He was in the military. He's a combat veteran. He speaks with somewhat of a credible voice when it comes to military matters. But I think something that's more appealing to Democrats than that is that he really seems to be able to stand up to Republicans and to President Bush in particular on military issues. I mean, he really takes a hard line and he doesn't back down. And that works because he's got the experience and the credibility to do that. And I think that's partly what's appealing to Democrats.
And since it'll be interesting to see, I know we're way out from the 2008 election, of course, as evidenced by Creed Eads' announcement. We're also way out from 2009, so...
we're not going to get a break from this.
We're really not until after 2009's election's over. Then we can breathe for a couple of years. But, well, Quentin, thanks for your time as always. We'll have you back on again soon.
The New Dominion Magazine, available in print in the Valley and Central Virginia. Find out more at thenewdominion.com.
For 5 years and counting, the Augusta Free Press, your portal into the Valley. Daily website, weekly podcast, and more. Online at AugustaFreePress.com. Everything Virginia, the New Dominion, www.thenewdominion.com.
Joining us now on the New Dominion Show is Lee Chapman, a New Dominion political correspondent. He's down there on the scene in South Carolina, covering the activity in really both those primaries, Republicans and Democrats, very active, hot and heavy in that state. And this week's column focuses on John McCain, and the column is straight talk enough. You can look at it on thenewdominion.com. And so Lee, the McCain campaign in South Carolina, 8 years ago, that's where the McCain Express came to a halt in that 2000 primary season. He came into South Carolina maybe a favorite in that race and left, you know, Senator McCain, I guess we can say. First off, just, you know, is it possible that what happened in 2000 kind of still resonates here in 2008 in South Carolina for the McCain campaign?
Well, the Bush team was able to paint McCain initially as a liberal, and then when McCain retaliated with a negative ad of his own, then they were able to denounce him as a negative campaigner. And his in the last 2 weeks of the campaign, his negative rating among voters went from 4% to 18%. And I think that is carrying over 8 years later. I think that you know, a lot of voters probably still perceive McCain as more liberal than other Republican candidates. He's not an evangelical favorite, and now that Mike Huckabee, you know, has become the evangelical favorite, and I just don't think that it looks very good for McCain either this time around. And he has spent a tremendous amount of time in this state, really going from town to town, you know, restaurant to restaurant, pancake house to pancake house. There are always, you know, some veterans in the audience following him around. You know, he's the big, big favorite among a lot of veterans. But I think that there's still ramifications from 8 years ago that are hurting him in the primary this time around.
And of course, the ramifications you mentioned, the what happened, I guess, in public there, so to speak, with the way the Bush campaign was able to paint him into a corner for, you know, those alleged negative ads, and certainly he stopped running them towards the end of the campaign, so he felt like the criticism was valid. But then there's also that beneath the scenes campaign where the push polling and the other stuff going on with questions raised about his adopted daughter and some other things as well that was under the radar, but something we've definitely heard about since then. I just wonder if that might have an impact as well, just because that stuff was out there 8 years ago, and I'm sure that that there are people who remember what they got on those phone calls at that time 8 years ago.
Yeah, there were, if you go to a lot of liberal websites who really hate the Bush administration, they will bring up and probably exaggerate to some degree what happened 8 years ago, but it was pretty dirty stuff. You know, there were flyers put out questioning, I think some of them referred to McCain as the fag candidate, you know, because he met with the log cabin Republicans. He was the only candidate that would questioning the fact that he had a daughter who was not white. They referred to her as his black daughter, when in reality, you know, she's from India. He and his wife adopted a child from Calcutta. Just, you know, some pretty seedy stuff. Played up the abortion card and made McCain almost seem as pro-abortion as anybody on the left. So that's got to still be a part of it. But the other thing is, and you know, I find this ironic, is McCain is being hurt also among independent voters who are against the Iraq War, because in spite of the fact the Bush people really went after him 8 years ago, he is still, of course, steadfastly supported the president's policy to go to a war in Iraq and to win the war there. So it's a pretty bittersweet picture you paint of McCain in South Carolina.
I want to thank Lee Chapman for his time. Again, that column on the John McCain presidential campaign from the South Carolina perspective, Lee's covering the South Carolina primaries for us, is on thenewdominion.com. You can check it out this week on thenewdominion.com, and Lee will have some more dispatches for us from South Carolina's Republican and Democratic primaries in the next few weeks as we get closer and closer to the beginning of this 2008 presidential season. Voting will be beginning right after the new year. So I want to thank Lee for his time. Also, of course, thank Quentin Kidd from Christopher Newport University. We're talking about 2009 already in Virginia, with Creed Deeds throwing down a gauntlet last week, announcing his run for governor in 2009. Also want to thank Kent Willis from the ACLU and talking about fusion centers and some ideas the ACLU has for giving Virginia citizens more oversight over those fusion centers and gather information about private Virginia citizens. And also want to thank Bill Bowling, special guest, Lieutenant Governor of Virginia, talking about the Virginia budget. We'll have Bill on again next week for part two of our interview, where we talk about the presidential campaign. So a lot to look forward to there. Until we talk to you again, it's going to be Christmas in between, so I want to wish you the best, merriest Christmas you can possibly have, and we'll talk to you again soon. Take care. Have a great week.
The New Dominion is a production of Augusta Free Press. All rights reserved. For more on the New Dominion, visit our website at thenewdominion.com and look for the New Dominion magazine at a bookstore near you. The New Dominion, everything Virginia.
Want a hard copy of this week's show? CDs are available for $9.99. Email us at augfreepress@comcast.net to order yours. That's augfreepress@comcast.net.